The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 5th of October, 2020. In fact, that's 5/10/20, isn't it? Useless fact there. On today's podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about what he's been trading, including Lean Hogs and the IP Group. That's IPO ticker. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Venture Life Group, Catney Innovations, British Honey Company. We also know about onthemarket.com, which I did a video on it for yesterday. And I think worth looking at. Could be a disruptor to the big one. Right move. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I'll have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both those lists, top 10 versions of those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see lots of other content. Something there on Bizant Resources. There's also videos there and podcasts. Plus, COVID-19 Index. Check it out. Biggest rise of the day is Novacyt, the king of the COVID testing companies, up 15% to 667. Biggest fall of the day, Tech Capital, down 8% pretty much to 11.75 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Crypto Trader. He's full of cold. And in summary, three rules: grow your profits, cut your losses, trade the trend. That's in your book, isn't it, Glenn?
That's right. That's right, and I'm not full of cold. I just sound that way. I've no idea why.
Why do you say you sound quite bunged up, quite nasally? I've had that the last couple of weeks.
I don't have a cold. I haven't got one.
I had a flu jab, right? And I've still been sneezing and all that stuff and blowing my nose for the last 2 weeks. So I'm thinking I've got, you know, and part of me thinks I've had the old COVID. But there we are.
I mean, it's kind of possible. Some people have had cold-like reactions to COVID, but it's unlikely. My diagnosis is you haven't got COVID.
I said this on the weekend podcast. I said, if you're a business, right, that's been told by the government to restrict or lock down, and they're offering you no financial compensation, just open back up. You can't just shut your business down. If they're telling you to shut down because of coronavirus, they've got to pay you, haven't you? I mean, there are certain businesses, like nightclubs, for example, can't open, and they got no sort of financial compensation. Furlough's running out, so they've got nothing else. So what do
But if they open anyway, then the police are going to come in, aren't they?
It doesn't matter. I'd say, well, lock me up. Lock me up, find me, do whatever you want. I'd just say, we'll do safe dancing, you know, dance away, a meter away from each other, wear a mask. Because otherwise, under protest, just lock me up. I can't pay a fine, by the way. Do what you want. I can't do anything. My business is gone anyway. So what else am I going to do? So they've got to offer you some kind of compensation, haven't they? If they're going to shut you down. You can't just say shut you down. That's it. You can't live off anything. That's it. You starve. You sack everyone.
Well, unfortunately, they can say that, and that sort of always.
But don't do it. I'm saying to any business.
We don't live in a free country that we like to think we do. Not ultimately.
You know, any business out there doing that, don't do it. That's my advice.
Even if it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, don't do it, though. Don't do it. I think we should all stand up and say, don't do it. I'm not doing it. Unless you offer some compensation, not doing it. What you need to do, rather than wreck the economy, which will cost the government a lot more, what they should be doing is helping the economy. People who can, they shouldn't be up to speed now on tests anyway, but they should be helping to shield the people who are most vulnerable more, putting, you know, sort of protection in place for those, and helping the rest of the economy get on with it. Because we are getting now to a really crucial time in the year where, like I said, a lot of retailers generate about 70% of their profits over the Christmas period. And if they can't do that, and of course that knock-on effect from people going out shopping to other businesses, to anything else, coffee shops, sandwich shops, you know, it's massive. And if you can't do that, we're going to have I dread to think the state of this economy after Christmas if they don't do something now and help people who can work, who are not likely to get, you know, affected by the coronavirus, who are, you know, healthy-ish. You know, Donald Trump, he's obese and over 70. He's fine. But Prince Charles caught it. He was fine. You know, there's a lot of old people catching it. And so I just think, why is the fear? They've really ramped up the fear, haven't they? Are they over the top? And it's just affecting everything. There's going to be more deaths. Well, there are more deaths by suicide at the moment than coronavirus, I think, if you look at the stats. I just understand what it's all about. The vaccine will be here in about a month's time.
Well, there is the Sweden situation, isn't there? Which it just stands there in stark contrast to the rest of the world, sort of daring every other country effectively to do what they've done. Because we were just looking at the stats before we went on air, me and you, and we looked them up, and Sweden has got 578 deaths per million. And the United Kingdom, meanwhile, has got 633, USA 632. The worst in Europe is Belgium with 877 deaths per million. And you know, obviously Sweden's figure 578 is still, you know, somewhere in the top half of Europe, certainly. It's not a good figure for deaths. But when you consider that they have allowed their economy and their society to remain almost entirely open, really, throughout this entire period, they barely know the meaning of lockdown. And yeah, yet they've got a figure that's better than ours at the end of that. So of course it's natural to question why that should be. And the main reason, from what I've read, and I've tried to read as much as I can to try to get to the bottom of it, seems to be their culture, their society, is built around trust.
But
societies are built around trust to some extent, but theirs is particularly a trusting society where they all do the right thing without having to have a new law put in place saying do the right thing. They just do it, basically.
I suppose it doesn't help that we've had policy change after policy change. It's been up and down the country. and there's no common sense.
No, we can't use our common sense if we're given a bunch of arbitrary rules that change, as you say, from day to day. Nobody can keep up with what the rules are. So in this country, so everybody just starts going, oh, sod it then, because I don't know what the rules are anymore. Nobody knows. Let's just try and use our common sense. But I mean, what is that anyway? When you sow
but
that
also,
much
they made a big mistake today. Dominic Cummings should have been sacked.
Doing what they're supposed to. Yes, Dominic Cummings should definitely have been sacked. That would have set a good example.
Of course. I mean, people are just saying now, why not do it? If the government or ministers can't do it, why should I do it? Why are they going? And the thing is, I did say about common sense. The trouble is with common sense, people don't rely on common sense. The trouble is, not everyone's got common sense. I mean, I've been out. I went to Apple a while back, right? Yeah. About my phone had conked out, wouldn't work out, and you go outside, you queue, social distancing. And they've got marks on the floor outside the shop where you have to queue. There's a guy standing right behind me. Right on my back pocket, pretty much.
Exactly, but that wouldn't happen in Sweden.
And he was whinging as well. He'd been waiting longer than me. He hadn't. And in fact, one of the Apple guys said, "Can you just stand on your spot, please, sir?" And okay. You're an idiot. And I thought, yeah, but the thing is, you're right. Sweden hasn't created their economy. We've done all these lockdowns and all this stuff. We've created the economy, and still more people have died. And so we're thinking, what's the point? I understand. I think if you give clear guidance to people, say if you are 70, you've got a health condition, just don't go near humans. They're filthy animals anyway. So just stay away from them for a while. We'll get a vaccine soon, and you'll be the first to be vaccinated. Extremely vulnerable health workers, and then everyone else can crack on anyway. But I mean, yeah, I'm getting so annoyed with it because I just think it's insane.
Look, I don't live in Sweden, and I'm not Swedish, but so I'm only kind of conjecturing here. But the impression I get, as I say, from various articles, is that if somebody had done what happened to you in that shop, if somebody had sort of come up too close behind you without a mask and all the rest of it, in Sweden, 100 eyes in that shop would have turned to that person and glared at them until they backed off. It's sort of when you've got a cohesive society where everybody instinctively knows after just a few words from the politicians about, yeah, right, we all want you to keep your distance. They're all like, okay, that makes sense. Yep, let's keep our distance. And then they keep their distance. It's like that's what a coherent, cohesive, civilized society looks like, where people just do, they, as you say, use their common sense. Whereas in this country, and much more so in America, they have such an attachment to kind of concepts like freedom that you would get that person then arguing back with everybody in the shop. Like, no, it's my freedom to stand close to this person if I want to. I can do it if I want. This is a free country. It's like, yeah, freedom is important, but also social pressure and civilization and collectiveness have their place as well. You know, America is so attached to individualism, and individualism, I believe in it, and I think it's important, but also collectivism is also important if you want to have a society that functions. And it just seems to me that Sweden has found a nice, healthy balance between those.
Anyway, is coronavirus affecting your trading?
In what sense?
Well, any sense. I mean, are you doing
well?
Worse?
It did massively initially, of course, because, you know, back in March when the market crashed, and I sold all my stuff, you may remember, just before or just at the very start of
you
the crash.
You are so good. Just before? Yeah, how did you do that?
Hold on, no, but then I wasn't that good afterwards. Huh?
How did you
are
do
you being
before?
Sarcastic? Are you being serious?
Well, but you saw it just before the crash. How did you do that?
Well, because if you go back and listen to our old podcasts, you'll find that I was very worried
long
about coronavirus. I was long, like everyone was, because the market was doing well. But I was worried, very worried about the impact of coronavirus, if I may say so, long before most other people were. I was kind of one of those people back in January who was already stockpiling food because I could see what was coming because it was bloody happening in China already and the virus had already started to spread outside China. So as far as I was concerned, the writing was on the wall. So I was ready to sell, but I wasn't selling until I saw the signs of the market actually falling because, again, if you listen back to the podcast, you'll hear me say, I don't understand, the market's not falling, it should be. But being a trend follower, I stick with the trend, so I carried on holding until I actually saw signs that the market was starting to fall. Anyway, but then it all went Pete Tong because after the market collapsed, coronavirus did affect my mentality quite seriously in that I didn't expect the market to recover like it has done because I took the economic damage to be a foregone conclusion and therefore that the market would respond by not rising very much. I just, you know, I knew there was always a possibility that the market would go crazy and just start going high again. We talked about it back then, that there was always a possibility the market would be totally irrational. But I wasn't going to bet all my money on the market being totally irrational. And obviously, with hindsight, I should have bet all my money on the market being crazy and irrational, because then I would have made more money. As it is, I didn't. And so I only started buying it back into the market at a much later point. So, yeah, coronavirus has affected my trading this year in that respect.
Where are you now? Are you? Do you have any positions? Are you long or short? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, much the same as when we spoke last week, I'm still long and short. I have a number of both positions, basically trading individual stocks based on their chart patterns. So some charts led me to buy breakouts on stocks that were very bullish, and other stocks broke downwards. You know, they had long patterns that were sort of going sideways and then they broke very sharply downwards, and they were signs for me to go short on a number of stocks. So I've got some long positions, but I've got more long positions than I have short positions, but I am obviously, I have my finger on the sell button of every one of those stocks, because who knows when the market may suddenly decide to stop being as irrational as it is and as bullish as it is and to start suddenly crashing again.
What percentage of your of your holdings, your portfolio in cash? What cash? How much cash do you hold?
Let's see. I haven't calculated it recently, but I would estimate, well, certainly more than 50% in cash at the moment. I'm mostly in cash, but I still have a significant exposure to stocks and also some commodities. I've been doing particularly well on lean hogs in the commodities market.
Why? Yes, shouldn't hogs are not lean, are they?
The lean ones are.
How do they get sold then? I saw fat hogs would do well rather than lean hogs. I mean, not a lot of meat on lean hogs, is there?
I think it's hogs that have a lot of lean meat.
Oh, okay.
Well, fat, because you don't want to eat a bunch of fat, do you?
Well, no.
So
no.
Anyway, the lean hogs, which I trade on the commodities markets, have been booming in
price.
Why
is that? Why are they booming in price?
I guess, because, you know, their price collapsed in March along with everything else because, I guess, people decided that there wouldn't be that much demand for pork. Because people were going to be poorer and meat is expensive. And then they have recovered very, very significantly in September. Well, not very, very significantly. I mean, the trend hasn't been that huge so far, but they do seem to be in a decent upward trend.
Well, have
so
you been monitoring lean hogs then? Is that what you put up? What do you do?
I trade trends, you know. I like a. Yeah, how do you anything know? That's going strongly up or strongly down.
Yeah, I know
down,
that. I know that. But what? How, what has it alerted you to this trend?
Oh, I follow all the markets and I trade all the markets. So we're talking,
I trade currencies, everything.
Stocks, everything.
Give me one word answers or two word answers.
What do you want to know?
What alerts you to that trend? Now, you say you follow the markets. Yes, we don't just go manually around thousands of markets, do you? And you must have some kind of system in place that alerts you.
Well, with commodities, there aren't that many markets that are tradable. So it is actually quite easy to go around them manually. And I do that, for example, on a website called finviz.com, which some of your listeners might use, finviz.com. Just a free account on that particular site that I have. There's a page where they basically just have all the futures listed in one, like they have the charts of all of them, little charts, like 12 on a screen at a time, and you just scroll down, and within a few minutes, I can see all the major commodities and currency markets and treasury markets in the world, and just take a quick look at the trends, see if anything looks like it's going to break out or has broken out. It doesn't take much time at all. Because there aren't that many of them. I mean, stocks, obviously, stocks and shares is a different game altogether because there are so bloody many of them, thousands. So you have to be more systematic. You have to use trading screeners and that kind of thing to weed out the good stocks. But what? With commodities, you can just look at them manually.
Okay, I'm still going here. Okay, right. I'm a FinViz. It stands for Financial Visualization.
Go to the Futures tab.
The Futures, quotes, performance charts. Okay, so
I
can look at ethanol, gold, silver, live cattle, feeder cattle, lean hogs.
Lean hogs.
Corn, soybeans. Rough rice. Oh, I don't like rough rice.
I did well on soybeans. Soybeans have gone up a lot this year.
I don't like rough rice, but it's genteel rice. Gentle rice. Yeah. Polite rice, I like. Soybeans, cotton.
I've traded rough rice a lot in the past. It's had some good trends.
I don't know what. It's, to me, I need motivation. I need to get. I like investing in businesses and companies. I like businesses, you know? I like to read about businesses. I just wouldn't get the same kick, I don't think, from investing in lean hogs.
I hear you. But, you know, I'm in this partly to make money. Obviously, that's not the only reason. I like to be interested in things as well. And as you quite rightly point out, it's much easier to get interested in particular companies and the story of companies rather than what the corn harvest is going to be like this month, which is perhaps not so fascinating to someone like me. But nonetheless, the commodities markets get some of the best trends. For trend followers, the commodities markets are generally regarded as the best markets in the long term, over the long term, because you tend to get the best results from commodities.
Okay, give people listening a tip then. What are you looking at? What's setting up nicely? Anything you've got your eye on and think, oh, hang on, if that goes there, I'm in. Or if that goes there, I'm out. Or whatever, I'm short.
Let's have a look. I'm just looking at my watch list. If I'm a watch list...
What is your watch list? For what? Stocks? What are you looking at?
What do you want me to talk about?
Anything, stocks. Most people listening to this are an investor, I suppose. So are any stocks out there you're looking at? The trends?
Long in. Yeah, there are a... Well, let's see. Do they have to be British ones? Because that makes it more difficult.
You've gone quite obscure with lean hogs. Come on, let's try and get something that's on the radar for the UK listener.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at IP Group PLC.
Okay.
IP Group.
Yeah. Sound like IP Group. Yeah. And they're about 800 million market cap.
They're a leading intellectual property commercialization company and a constituent of the FTSE 250.
Yeah.
So they invest in technology companies, basically. They're a good firm from what I can make out from the fundamentals. And technically, as you know, I like my technicals. They have fallen for years and years and years. So this is a kind of a turnaround
play. The chart there. Do you like the chart there? Yes, good looking chart.
Yeah, they bottomed in March and they've been slowly, slowly rising. Well, I say slowly rising. They've doubled since March, more or less. But they're still, you know, historically speaking, they're still far lower than they used to be. So there may well be a long way to go on the upside here. They are close to a technical breakout, very close to it. So I've been watching it closely.
So are you looking for a break of what? Well, it's gone down from, I'm scrolling out here, the chart, so there's a visualization. Yeah. So from, you know, I'm going back to 2016, pretty much it peaked out there at 260 a share, the double top there, second top was lower than the first top, which is always a telling sign. They grinded lower from that level down to 40 pence and dash for cash, for, oh, 43 pence, say, dash for cash day. And they've been grinding up higher now, 79 pence. But I mean, a huge series of just higher lows going through the 200-day moving average. 200-day moving average now, we've had a 50-day moving average crossing the 200-day. There's a golden cross, of course. So the trend looks like it's up. And again, I was looking on the market yesterday. They've never had that happen until recently. In fact, this company has had that. They've had a bump down in 2018, and it temporarily crossed on that. But yeah, this looks like a better bottom, doesn't it? If you take out that volatility of March, it would have been a nice round bottom there for me, I think, because...
I agree. And if we get a nice sharp movement upwards, that's really what I'm looking for, a proper breakout. If we get a nice sharp movement upwards, then that would signal to me that probably a new bull market in that share has begun. And that's, I know it seems ridiculous, but that's what trend followers do. It's like the price has already doubled from the bottom. So many people would consider it already expensive. But a trend follower doesn't care about having missed the bottom. You know, we're happy to miss the bottom bit if there's a much bigger trend to come on the upside, which there may well be in this case.
Yes, absolutely. No, yes. If you're a trader, look at the chart, that decent looking chart. I would either a breakup. So you would look over for a breakup, would you, rather than say a pullback? As an investor, I'd try and get cheaper. You don't mind that. You just try and get it, break it, punching up. Where would you buy that then?
Well, trend followers, you know, we like to get closer to certainty. We like to know that something's probably going to be a good bet rather than, you know, because if you buy nearer the bottom, you're really taking a punt. And yeah, you might win big.
No, I mean a pullback from this level. I mean, I would like to see a bit of a... So look, in fact, it has had a little pullback.
Because it tried to break out last Monday and it failed.
I would maybe scale in here if I was an investor, if the fundamentals were good, but I don't know what they are. I've never looked at them somewhere else. But, half yearly results.
The point is you can get a nice measured risk-reward point at a breakout from a point like this because you know where you can place a stop loss if it turns out that the breakout is a false one. And if it's not a false one, then you've got your stop loss in place and it will never get hit because the market will just soar away ahead. So that's why I like to buy breakouts, because it makes it easier to work out where the stop loss should go. It makes it easier to work out what would constitute a failure. Whereas if you just buy at any random point, say lower down in the chart, then it's much harder to work out when you've got it wrong and when the thing is not in a bull market. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. I'm not a fan. As an investor, I'm not a fan of investment companies at all.
Just generally?
Yeah. Because this is my thoughts on it, okay? Let's say you got... I know some of the times you can't get access, especially the worst of them are investment companies that actually buy companies that are listed, investing companies that are listed.
Because you can get
exposure to yourself for that. Because what happens is this. I did it working up before, but let's say they own 10 companies, right? And they have 10% each. Own 10% of those companies each. So, first of all... they've only got 10%. Then, as far as your portfolio is concerned, let's say you buy, acquires 10% of your portfolio in IP Group, for example. So if one of those companies is like a 10-bagger, it'll only double their portfolio value. So that means you know, that leverage, you aren't getting exposed to that proper leverage because you've only got 10% anyway in your portfolio. Yeah. So, and of course, they've got other assets as well. So it's always a sum of the parts. And generally, an investment company is only as good as the average performance of all those companies. And they can't get it right because, of course, they invest in high-risk companies anyway, early doors companies. So some of them will fail. So essentially, you're only getting the best of the average performance of all stocks, because there's obviously there's some of the worst, the best, everything. So yeah, I don't like that.
That's true, but I mean, with a, you know, I agree with you certainly for companies that just invest in other listed companies, because you might as well just buy those other listed companies, like you say. But in a case like IP Group, they're investing in tiny little university startups.
No, some of them are listed. I mean,
a few of them are. Yeah, but looking down the list of all their top 20 holdings, most of them are not quoted on exchanges. Most of them are still pre that stage. I'm just looking down the list here.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. When you've invested, listen, in that many companies, it's pointless. You're not getting any exposure to the one you want. If you get a blockbuster...
Yeah, but so many of them are teeny tiny little university things, some of which might go massive.
But they may do. They have to be a blockbuster and go super massive to make any change on the portfolio values, literally, because obviously you've got one or two not doing anything in there at all. So it's literally,
sure, but that's like, you know, it's like investing in a dragon from Dragon's Den. It's like going, okay, I'm going to follow this dragon. Will invest in tons and tons of tiny little ventures, and just one or two of them will become massive.
You want to talk about Jack Dorsey, didn't you? You've got 1 minute left. But I did a spreadsheet recently on diversification and why basically you should never go above 10 stocks ever. And I showed why, even if the best one is a 10 bagger, you know, a 10, then you've doubled your portfolio. But if you get less than that, and 10 bagger doesn't happen very often. And to get a 10 bagger in your portfolio.
But it's different with venture capital. Venture capitalists invest in tons and tons of stuff because most of them fail.
I know exactly, so there's no point doing it. Anyway, listen, go on, Jack Dorsey.
All right, just a quick word on, seeing as we haven't talked about Bitcoin and blockchain. Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, CEO of Twitter, is a massive, massive fan of Bitcoin and blockchain generally. And he's setting up a non-profit venture, sort of attached to Twitter, but separate, which is intending to, it seems, build what would be a kind of a decentralized version of Twitter, one that's kind of owned and run by its own members, rather than having a big company in charge, and everybody would control their own data and blah blah blah, and it would all be a lovely, wonderful utopia. So it's nice that he's trying to do that, because a lot of people complain that Twitter is very heavy-handed in banning people and stuff these days, and at the same time he's getting pressure from the other side, of course, because governments are constantly saying you need to ban more people, you need to suppress more speech. So he's in a bit of a bind there, but he's as I say, trying to create a decentralized alternative that nobody would control, that governments hopefully wouldn't control and companies wouldn't control.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say it's non-profit, a bit like Twitter. That's a bit of a non-profit. Let's try to make a profit anyway. Marvellous. Cheers, Glenn, and I will speak to you next weeky.
Okay, goodbye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of, what is it? Brand Communications.
Brand Communications, the very one. And also Nervous Communications, but there we go.
What's your thoughts, Alan? Any thoughts today on the markets? I'm just so annoyed at the government, I really am.
The blonde bumbling idiot. I mean, both sides of the Atlantic. But was a scam. That was a giant scam to try and win votes, to try and make himself look more popular. I've got COVID. I'm going to hospital. Oh, miracle cure. Oh, I'll just do a drive past. I mean,
Boris or Trump? That wasn't a good impression.
Trump. Just cynical.
That was like an English accent, though. That was.
Yeah, cynical manipulation of the electorate. I mean, it's just dreadful. Just how much lower can the US go? They've already blown all their credibility anyway. Absolutely shocking. But
it is funny that Melania did say that. She said they asked why she hasn't visited Trump, and she said, "Well, I don't want to. I've got COVID. I don't want to put the people driving me, in serious threat of contagion." And yet, it's Trump driving around with six people in his car waving to his supporters.
Exactly.
What are you doing, you fool? I know, but there we are. But the thing is, it's Trump. Nothing surprised me from that imbecile now. It's, you know, it's, I sort of started like him at the start, but same with Boris, and now I just think you're a pair of idiots, both of you.
I think Putin and Xi's plan was always to get Trump into power and keep him there, because that way he kind of undoes the credibility of the US all over the world single-handedly, and he's doing a pretty damn good job, as far as I can see.
Well, Biden needs to say is that people all around the world are laughing at you. You're a laughingstock of the world.
Yeah.
And, but then, I don't know, I've said before, give Americans a viable alternative. Biden's like 89. What is he, 94, 102? Well, I don't know what he is, but he won't make a four-year term. So it's ridiculous. You've got to give someone a viable alternative. It's like over here, wasn't it? Let's be honest. Theresa May. And what was the alternative? Jeremy Corbyn. It's like all they had to put up was a sensible, normal-looking human, Labour. Well, that's all they had to do.
It wasn't just that. It wasn't just the prospect of Jeremy Corbyn. It was the prospect of Diane Abbott as Chancellor.
I know, exactly. It's a comedy outfit. All that put up was normal human beings. To find two relatively normal human beings, stand there and say normal things, and they just couldn't do that. So what a hope have you got? You realise people at the top, it's like they're running the country, these people. It's like, you know, the state of art, the messages sent out by our government. It's like, guys, come on. I mean, even, you know, the smallest business in this country could do a lot better job than you're doing. You're confusing everyone. Just keep it simple, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and you're killing the economy for no reason. Anyway.
Well, as Billy Connolly said some years ago, you know, what sort of person wants to become a politician in the first place anyway? Well,
yeah, exactly. You know. the very person who wants to run the country is the very person who shouldn't be running the country.
You know? Exactly, He said the very desire to be a politician should bar you for life from ever being one.
Yeah,
I think that really sums it up.
Yeah, you should be nominated by the general public because you've done well at something, and regardless of what you've done, you know, of your choice, you just... They vote you in. That's the way it should be. If you've achieved a lot and done very well, like somebody, you know, David Attenborough or something, he should be there somewhere. People like that, who are very sensible, done well at business as well. Stocks out.
Okay, stocks. Venture Life Group, VLG is the epicode, has had a phenomenal year to date. Venture Life are what they call on the website a self-care group, and they have a portfolio, a large portfolio of products for self-care, including mouthwash, cosmetics, a whole raft of... Yes, indeed. Mouthwash. Nice. Well, there's a very good story coming up on that, which I'm just going to...
Oh, I'm looking forward to a story on mouthwash.
of course you are, mate. Of course you are. But the company forecast it was rapid growth early this year. It struck a landmark agreement with a Chinese distributor worth 168 million euros over 10 years. Has a manufacturing base in Italy, and the share price fell sharply in March, frankly, when everything else did, because of course the manufacturing facility is based in Lombardy, which is the centre of the COVID outbreak in Italy. However, not only were they unaffected, they increased capacity during the period, and that continues to date with the growth, the deals they've signed. I mean, I'll just take you through some of the developments that are taking place. They have a brand called Dental, D-E-N-T-O-I-L, and they have toothpaste brands, mouthwash brands. They have a range of nail care products which have been launched across Lloyd's Pharmacy.
Product range? Sorry, there's a story on the mouthwash. So I'm looking for the good story, you're going to say.
Okay. Well, the story in the mouthwash is this: they announced with the half year results that an independent study was going to be undertaken by Professor David Thomas at Cardiff University.
Oh, Di Thomas, is it? Professor Di Thomas, right? Lovely.
David Thomas.
In Wales, it's called Di. See, David Di. Di Thomas.
David Di. Yes. Of course. Yes. Of course. You know about that, wouldn't you, boy?
Yeah.
That's your.
You can't get any Di Thomas, Professor Di Thomas from Cardiff University. That's perfect. Well, Di Evans has been better, but come on, Di Thomas. What are you saying?
Thomas. So they've undertaken a study to establish whether mouthwash reduces the viral load, including COVID-19.
It should do, shouldn't it?
Well, That's what but they're establishing that they're putting some firm clinical data behind it with the survey. The brand of mouthwash being used is Venture Life's own dental mouthwash. It's the only mouthwash that they're going to use for the trial, and that was launched during the summer, and we'll be hearing results on that as we go forward.
I've just realised, really, they are basically a COVID play, aren't they? And they've done fantastically well. Look at the chart there. I wouldn't get involved.
It's nothing to do with COVID at all. That's the great thing with this company.
What I'm saying is that they are in products that will, of course, popular anyway, but, you know, people are now buying a lot more of these, like hand gel, dental, you know, mouthwash. Yeah. And like I said, you look at the chart, though. But you know, where'd this top off? Because it went from 20, it touched 20 pence in the Dash for Cash on the 17th of March, and now it's at 101 pence. So it's a five-bagger, pretty much. And do you invest in a five-bagger? I mean, would you do that?
Well, the company's currently worth $86 million, and the shares are pushing year highs. But the point is the growth behind the company is not only sustaining that. There's exponential growth taking place, both on the back of the developments during the first half. 1 million, you mentioned hand sanitizer, 1 million units sold to Asda, and they've developed a range of Distin Plus hand sanitizers and antibacterial gels. They also are a distributor for Alliance Pharma, and Alliance Pharma have a cosmetic Kelligoat brand which they distribute. They acquired a company called PharmaSource last year, which are now fully integrated, and on the back of that, up to the end of June, they increased revenues by 80% ahead of the forecasts for the house broker, which forecast 50% revenue growth. They increased revenues by 80% to just under 17 million. Gross profit up 97% to 6.99 million. So,
amazing. Interim results up 80%, like I said, revenue to 17 million, and profit before tax ninefold to 2.7 million. So let's say, you can double that. Let's say 6 million. But still valid. Well, you know, good growth. I know. But I had Jerry on the podcast a while back, and he was, obviously a little bit frustrated by the share price because it was grinding lows in a long downtime trend, and literally for a couple of years. And so he was wondering when it was going to turn around. But literally that big sell-off down to March. And then wow, you couldn't have had a better bounce back than that. It's fantastic. But would I be buying here? No. I've missed it. I'd say.
Well, I think I think that's a matter of opinion. But the company, I actually spoke to Jerry myself a few weeks ago, and we recorded an interview, and Jerry said that the growth from the company, you know, whilst there may be a slowdown in some parts of the business, other parts of the business are powering ahead. They've got three new long-term distribution agreements signed. As I mentioned, Lloyds Pharmacy, Lloyds Pharmacy launching the PharmaSource nail treatment range across the UK, and they've got Dental, which of course is a huge brand, and Boots are going to launch Dental across their chain of shops in the second half of the year. So there's an awful lot going on in the company, and of course, as you know, Jerry will put out trading updates here and there. I expect some consolidation for sure at this level, but the fact is that the company has grown on the back of revenues that are coming through the door. It's a real cash cow at the moment, and they have a lot of money in the bank. They're sitting on a cash balance of 6.6 million, down slightly from last year, but that reflected this PharmaSource acquisition. But Jerry has said to me, and he's made it very clear that they are looking at other organic acquisitions to integrate into the company. So given they've done so well with PharmaSource, I think any other company they buy in is going to bring more revenues into the bottom line, and basically maintain the pace of growth that we've seen so far this year. So, I think you're right, Jess. I think a period of consolidation now, but we get this stock consolidating around a pound for a few months. I think you'll see it'll be laying down a floor to launch the next assault, possibly on up a size £1.50 a share.
Yeah, again, that's opinion, Al. You can't say that. You can't just say, you may as well sell 10 quid.
I can give an opinion. I can give an opinion, but you know,
that's... my opinion has gone too far too fast. I'd wait and see where it's because it's done five bags in literally a couple of months. That's you know, not many companies do that, and when they do, they tend to have a cool off period.
Yep. Well,
high probability that it will not keep rising at this.
I think yeah. Well, once you get to 100 million plus, then the base of growth is going to slow down. But if they make acquisitions in that time that could contribute to the bottom line, then that's the plan. That's the plan for the business going forward. They've got a cash balance that will enable them to do that. They're cash rich as a company, and you know, there's no prospect of them needing to raise any money at any point. So that's the attractive thing. You know, if you can fund your own growth by buying up companies that are complementary to your core offering, then that's the way to drive a business forward. And, you know, Jerry Randall is in the process of doing that.
Okay, cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, so we've got British Honey Company's the Aquasolicit company. I want to talk about them. They put out some results today. But firstly, Cat and Eye Innovation, CTEAE, is the epic code. And, of course, I'm just going to basically bring people up to date on the offering. They are a blockchain company with a difference. They utilize blockchain for commercial purposes rather than it's nothing to do with Bitcoin or the cryptocurrency industry. They develop a range of applications to use both in leisure, in the leisure industry, and also across the commercial sector too. They have an insurance contract whereby fired oars are logged on the blockchain system, and the testing of those fire doors at various points which have to be done in commercial buildings are logged using the Cat and Eye system. But of course they sprung to the attention of investors and the markets as a whole.
Pop and drop, wasn't it? It's a punter's dream, that was.
Certainly a punter's dream. I mean, it's done phenomenally well, but I think...
But it was grinding down for ages, then went from one penny up to 8 pence, sold off quickly, back down to 1.2, then went back up again, come back down again, and it's at 2 pence. That's nuts, the volatility on that, isn't it? Just people ramping on Twitter and then jumping out of it. Right, do you know what? I see people on Twitter ramping like hell, think it's going to the moon, knowing full well, as people who are not very experienced at buying, they're dumping. You know, they're selling their shares to them. I hate that. You know, and generally, it's people who never show their face, never have their real name. And I said this on a video. If there's people on Twitter without a real name, even the transparency doesn't even stretch far enough where they'll share their face and their name, you should not trust them. Full stop. You know, it doesn't matter what they're saying about the stock, that it's going to the moon, it's going to be a 170 bagger, whatever. Do not trust them. If they can't even just share their real name and face, ignore them. They're a trader. Absolutely. They're trading. Yeah. They're selling you stock. They're pumping stocks and they're selling you their stock, basically. They don't want.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Jess. I couldn't agree more with that. But actually, there is substance behind Cat and Eye. And yes, it has been very much a pump and dump stock or used as that by traders. But there's a lot of substance behind the scenes. Chief Technology Officer Alan Simpson founded and launched the iPlayer for the BBC some years ago. He's a technical genius, this guy. And I've met him and spoken with him. And, you know, that's... I don't award the accolade lightly, but
it's not often you say technical genius, is it?
Really? No, that's right. When have I ever said technical genius on this podcast, Jess?
No, exactly, but it's a phrase you wouldn't use. It's a phrase you wouldn't use anyway, really, is it? It's not a common phrase, technical genius.
Okay, you're right. But no, Alan Simpson is in that category, as is the Professor Michael Mainelli. And Professor Michael Mainelli runs the company with whom Cat and I formed a partnership called ZN Group. And this guy is Emeritus Professor of Commerce at Gresham College. He founded the first digital map of the world. He's been involved in seismology, cartography, DIRA, that's the, of course, kinetic immersion that. And he's also been the sheriff of the City of London too. So
how do they earn money?
They provide technical solutions and they seek technical solutions basically to make the world a better place. But they've developed an app jointly with Cat and I, as you know. The app is the COVID app, and it's basically a digital wallet that that will identify. Have you been tested? Yes. Are you fit to go back to work? Yes or no. And your status is utilizes the blockchain system via the app to confirm your status. The thing is with blockchain, it's incredibly secure. You know, most other systems can be hacked, we've seen obviously sort of hackers in cryptocurrency. But the blockchain system, if utilized and put together correctly, is incredibly secure. So that's the attraction with this.
We've had this argument before, and people ranted on that fact, and the fact it was a COVID related. Every COVID small stock has been ramped, and like this. But I don't understand why someone would use this as opposed to the NHS app, which has been endorsed by the government by millions of people. Why would they use this?
It's for commerce. It's for companies logging employees who are returning to work, and
something the NHS app can be for companies, for people, can't it as well? You know.
Yeah.
Well, it's got a wider footprint as well. So that's the whole thing. Even with the NHS app, they were worried that not enough people will download it, and they need about 70% of the population to download it. So if they were the NHS app with the marketing spend and the budget the government have not getting enough traction, how on earth are Cat and I going to get enough traction with their app?
Well, Cat and I have launched their app and trialled the apps with Newcastle Premier Health, and that's just in the UK. Bear in mind, this app is being marketed all over the world, so it's not just restricted to the UK and the NHS, not by any standards. They also have an agreement with Botswana Company, owned by the former Botswana ambassador to the US and Canada. They've launched Africa ID in the Southern African countries, reaching potentially 346 million people, and we're due an update on that very shortly. And the app has now been rolled out to the commercial sector, and we're expecting to hear news in the coming weeks about the first commercial deals across the line following the trial with Newcastle Premier Health. So the company are at that transition phase where they have the app, it's been tested, it's been approved, got the stamp of approval, and we're now waiting for the deals to start dropping through the door and driving the company forward. But there's a very strong board behind the group too. Brian Thompson owns 29% of the company. He's an entrepreneur from the northeast there. BTIC insurance is one of the companies he founded, along with Third Eye Neurotech. John Farthing, the CFO, well-established figure in the city, and of course Guy Meyer, who's been involved with Cat and I all the way through, was confirmed early this year as the chief exec. So, along with Alan Simpson, Michael Manelli, there's an awful lot of brain power in that think tank to develop Cat and I, not only in the COVID arena, but utilising the applications into a multitude of arenas going forward. So, company's currently worth $6.6 million, trading at 3p a share. As you say, just it's been as high as 8-9p on the year, or just under 10p, in fact, and it's been as low as just under a penny. So, everything to play for. we expect news very shortly.
Yeah, cool. Okay, marvellous. What's the last one you're going to talk about?
So this is an Aquis Trader company. Aquis is, of course, the old Plus, the old Offex, the old what was the last one? I can't remember the last iteration, but anyway, it was the British Honey Company launched onto Aquis early this year. The company's currently got a market cap of 11 million, traded as high as 122p on the year. It's currently at 117p, so the shares haven't really moved much. But I just like what this company does. I think it's occasionally you get these niche companies that develop a business, and obviously, you know, beekeeping in the UK it's something of a pastime. But they are the UK's leading independent honey producer, and they produce some 7 million tons of honey per year from the estates that they're based on. They have a big estate in Oxfordshire and also various other suppliers around the country. They've also developed a spirit brand called Keepers, which they sell through Waitrose, Majestic Wine and Amazon, plus not on the high street and various other channels. The spirit brands include, they have their own gin brand, their own bourbon whiskey, rum, vodka and a range of liqueurs, most of which are infused with the honey that they produce. So again, there's a lot of growth, as we've seen, in UK spirit brands, particularly in gin, in the area of gin. There's gin's growing very rapidly as a drink, with a lot of new brands entering the market, and Keepers are one of the top brands. They also have God's Organic Gin under their umbrella, and the London Distillery, which is a whiskey brand. They have their own warehouse, bespoke end-to-end IT platform to support the business. So every bottle, every jar that goes through the company is traceable. And also during the COVID period, their production facilities lent themselves well to alcohol, sanitizer, and personal protective equipment. So they developed a business very quickly off the back of that. And today they put out their results for the half year. Just to mention a couple of other points, Michael Williams, the CEO, is 77 years of age. Can you believe that? Absolutely incredible. Ex Hewlett Packard, Altos, Freecom. He developed Freecom and
I can't believe it, because in America they've got a president who's 74 and a guy challenging who's 77.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, why not? Hey, 70 is the new 40. That's good. So, Alistair Wallace is the FD. Robert Porter Smith, he found a business called Natural Balance Foods, which he sold to Lotus Bakeries in Holland a few years back. Philip Sears is the new chairman. He's ex Credit Suisse and Phoenix Securities. He's just been appointed the new chairman of the group. When the company came to market, they raised just over $4 million at £1.10. In July, they struck a joint venture with Cottesmore, where Cottesmore and British Honey Company are to invest up to $1 million to set up and operate a distillery on the Tusmore Park estate in Oxfordshire. And of course, they have beekeeping facilities on the estate too. They also have a global licensing agreement with English Heritage and a deal with the List Distillery in Florida. That's worked well. There's been a share exchange between the two, where British Honey now owns 10% of List Distillery in Florida, and in return, List Distillery have just over 4.5% of British Honey Corporation. So the results today: revenue is up 440% to just over $1 million. Gross profit up 12-fold to just under 700,000, which is a pretty strong performance. Operating losses halved to 345,000 from 600,000, and they have $3.5 million cash in the bank. Also worth noting, we mentioned the alcohol sanitizer, £500,000 worth of sales. Those sales came from alcohol sanitizer. So they said today they don't believe that will be affected too much going forward for the near future. But of course, the other products will have to take up the sales slack as the alcohol sanitizer sales fall off.
Okay, so that takes the shine off a little bit, because obviously that's not
well. Yeah, I mean it does, but clearly, as they develop the other products and then the balance will be taken up. But this is a
there's no guarantee that sales will be taken up by other products, because who knows.
But there is that. But I think the way they've expanded already, the deals they're doing, also the outlets they're doing. I mean, English Heritage has got over 400 monuments with the little shops and the outlets to support that. So there'll be a trickle of sales coming in from there to support and grow the business. And indeed, the chief executive said today that they were well placed to deal with the COVID situation, strong cash position, and he anticipated delivering continued growth going forward. So I just think, you get these niche businesses come along now and then, and I think British Honey, it's a great idea, great brands, and support beekeepers. Why not?
And you've always got to be careful looking at these drinks companies, because they could blow up, couldn't they? Like Fever Tree, Fever Tree was one that went nuts, and never thought they would. Yeah. People thought it was a mixer. Why would people buy Fever Tree when you've got Schweppes, as the market leader? And of course, when you realise it's a market that hasn't been stood up for a while, that gin mix and all that kind of stuff, and they went nuts. The Fever Tree was the darling of the stock market for a while. Well, I haven't looked at the chart for a while. I'm still going to...
I think I saw something about that a while ago. I think the shine has come off a bit, but nonetheless, I mean, it's an interesting point there because you know, we will have a
chart that in 2015 it pretty much floated at 150.
Yep.
By September 2018, in 3 years, it had gone to 40 quid. Wow. Yeah. Hit topped out at 40 quid. Now it's still 23 quid now, so it's come down, but it bounced down at like literally 8, 9 quid in the Dash for Cash March sell-off. 9 quid. God, there's so many bargains we had then, wasn't there? But everyone running for the doors and wearing their pants. You know, if you just stepped up there and dumped into a few favorite stocks, you've done very well.
That was the time. Interesting thing with Fevertree, though, if you went to a supermarket and you were buying, let's say you and your wife can have a gin tonic in the evening, they're on the shelf. You've got Fevertree tonic and you've got Schweppes tonic. Which one would you go for?
Mm, yeah, exactly. Well, I've never heard of Fevertree at the time. It was brand new, so I wouldn't have gone for it, you know. So. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I've tried both, and I think the Fevertree brand is much better. You know, I'd always opt for Fevertree if it's available. So interesting that, you know, they've shifted my perception because, you know, Schweppes was the brand, wasn't it? You didn't think of it was either Schweppes or it was the shop's own brand, wasn't it? You know, Morrison's own or Sainsbury's.
That's why. Do you know what? Every now and again, you get one of these market leaders, and because they are market leader, been such a market leader for so long. Mm. They become a bit, blasé, and they don't innovate, and then you get a chance for a disruptor to come along. Do you know, I did a video yesterday on the market, and I've been watching them for a while, and they're starting to gain traction, and literally they're not far off having, they've got 14,000 now, agencies signed up to them. A right move, which is valued at 5.6 billion, on the market is valued at 63 million. Rightmove only had just below 20,000 agencies. They charge three times as much. And of course, that's why On the Market was set up. It was set up by agencies, and 65% of the shares in On the Market are owned by estate agents. And now, I set up an email and an alert for the same alert on both the apps. At the start, about a year ago, I was getting a lot more emails from Rightmove. Right now, they're pretty much neck and neck. And of course, On the Market, they've got new and exclusive, which is why I downloaded the app a while back. I heard the advert about it. The agents are prepared, they sign up with, they get shares as well. The agents are prepared to put their new properties on the market 24 hours before Rightmove and Zoopla. And all their metrics are growing, their site visits are growing, their agents are growing. And I'm thinking, look at the value gap between Rightmove are valued 90 times that of On the Market. And yet the revenue difference only 15 times. So when you get a big sort of market player like that, it's a bit, you know, blasé, and they're our market leader. There's open for a disruptor there to come in, especially doing well. And like I say, when you get estate agents backing On the Market, and they hate Rightmove because Rightmove is so expensive, but they have to have it. Then I think it's only going one way. You know,
eventually.
And they started. They've got plenty of cash. In fact, they started making cash this year. They've done very well. I think we're in inflection points. Have a look at the video, Al. I think you'll be convinced. And
I am already. We're seeing properties down where I live here are changing hands at a frantic rate of knots because, of course, we've got this stamp duty holiday. So that's really stimulated the market, even though we're in the middle of COVID. So for all these people turning up at to house viewings wearing masks and everything else, and they've got it down to a fine art now. They're actually growing in a market that's ideal to them. The market really has come to them. I'll take a
closer look at that. I just think, you know, the value difference between those two are massive, and yet of course they only turned over 80. In fact, the revenue's up 30% last year to 18 million. They're making a loss yet, but their losses are going down. They're halving, pretty much half on half, and they won't be far off becoming profitable. And like I say, Rightmove are valued at 20 times sales. And at the moment, On the Market, it's only valued at 3 times sales. So I think that will... They may have to meet in the middle. I'm not saying On the Market gets to 5.6, but even if it gets... Even if it's, 10 bags, it's still, a tenth of where Rightmove is. It can 10 bag. So, you know, I just think it's one, because obviously the property market is always going to be lively, isn't it, in this country? It's never going to...
Oh, yeah. Well, we're an island, you know. We're a finite territory, aren't we? So that will always support and sustain property prices, particularly in the hotspots, you know, southeast and so on. But no, interesting. I will take a look at that. That's a good call. I like that.
Yeah, and do us a favour, right? Set up, get both the apps, Rightmove, and on the market. Set up an alert for in your area. Say 5 miles. You know, put your budget in, put that bedrooms in, and then see how many emails you got. Because that's what it's all about. It's all about how much stock you got. And their stock is not far off Rightmove's now. They started off and see you've got to have the stock, and then you've got to have the eyeballs. And now their stock is about 700,000 properties they've got. They've got all the big house developers signed up to them, and Rightmove's only at 1 million. So they're not far off, you know, where Rightmove is, property-wise, stock-wise. So they're getting there, you know. So, it's quite impressive. And like I said, I'm getting emails from them both regularly, and often I get emails from On the Market before Rightmove, which is very interesting. And, of course, agents, of course, are going to be more loyal towards On the Market. If they own stock, and it's a third the price of fees-wise that Rightmove is, you know.
So, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, absolutely no-brainer. Yeah. No, I think Rightmove have fallen asleep on the job there.
Yeah. And they've also got another side of the business, right? They've got a tech let, which is for lettings agency. It's a cloud-based automated system where it sorts out all the documents you need for tenants and all that stuff. Cloud-based, it can be pretty much automated. So it's very good. They bought an option in that as well. So. And that's grown from like something that's ridiculous, like 6,000 of revenue from 2018 to 700,000 of revenue, 700,000 revenue the year after. So it's grown very quickly. Have a look, and I think it'll take a while, but it's getting there. But I just look at my video. I like to go through all the stats from, you know, site visits to agencies signing up to revenue growth. It's all happening. They're growing, you know. And yes, worth looking at.
Excellent. I'll do just that right now.
Do your own research, Al. Just jump in on my, you know,
DYOR. I would take a look. I would take a look. No, I like the sound of that. Though, if there's a good challenger brand that is coming into a market where there's a complacent market leader, then fireworks will take place.
Yes. Do you know, I took my fireworks, we got a dog, and I'm not looking forward to November the 5th, because dogs do not like fireworks. You've got dogs, haven't they? What do you do with your dogs when it's fireworks day?
Well, it's a funny thing, but our two Yorkies are completely unaffected by it. We have sliding doors back of the house, and you just close those, and they can't. It's all very, you know, that we only had it done a few years ago, so it's all very soundproof, so they can't really hear a thing anyway. But I certainly wouldn't take them outside. But they're not really fazed by the bangs. But we've got other dogs in the family that are absolutely terrified.
I think we got off topic a little bit here.
We have indeed.
Well, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak you next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Alba Mineral Resources, down 7.6% to 0.425. At four, Omega Diagnostics, up 3.2% to 96.5. At three, Royal Dutch Shell, is it a bounce? Up 3.6% to 9.66. At two, Cineworld, down 40% to 23.72%. Of course, they're shutting all their cinemas in the UK. Could see 5,500 jobs go in the UK alone. But I think it's about 45,000 around the world. And number one most followed is onthemarket.com. And I did a video on that yesterday. Just search Justin Waite on the market at YouTube, and you get that. And why I invested. Do your own research, please. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Bezant Resources. Update on MMIH and Mankayan project. At four, Union Jack Oil, West Newton B, One Well, commencement of drilling. At three, it's Alba Mineral Resources. Update on work and activities of Clogai. At two, Predator Oil and Gas, operational update and CO2 supply Trinidad. And at one, Tech Capital, portfolio company update, Guidant Limited, and but oddly, it's down today on that update, down close to 8% to 11.75 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.